This is Matt Connickson. I'm a sales agronomist with CHX Ag Services in Oakley, Minnesota. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHX Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Thursday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Tyler Donaldson, along with Randy Conan. We'll also be hearing a report from Melissa Hammer. An early start to the planting season has been put on hold for many Devils Lake, North Dakota area farmers. JS Ag Consulting agronomist Jason Hodes says the recent rains have many farmers itching to get back out into the fields.
You know, we got a little bit of crop in the ground. It started out, we were real dry, and we kind of got an early start here, in April. Towards that end of April, we did get some small grains in, a little bit of barley and some wheat. And we've had this couple-week wet spell here, so we're just kind of itching to get back going here again. And I think it'll probably be a couple more days, maybe Saturday of this week, before it really gets good conditions again out in the field here. Now it's just still pretty tacky, and hurry up and wait right now.
The rains were much needed, but Hodes is hoping for some sunshine next.
We needed it. I think a lot of guys are kind of getting to the point now where you hate to say that I wish it would stop raining for a little bit, but we definitely did get recharged and soaked back up, which we dearly needed up here. We were super dry up in our country, so it was welcome to get the rain, get the crops out of the ground and whatnot when we get going here again. And so field conditions are good. The low spots are still tacky and wet and right now, but if we could just get some sun and get her to dry up, I think we'd be sitting really good.
Wolford, North Dakota's Chris Brossart says the recent rains have done wonders for the dry soils.
We're really fortunate in this area. We did get a fairly early start just with no snowfall, and things were kind of coming around. We actually started around the 15th of April, got a few days in before that first blessing of rain. We had extremely dry here, so we've had probably 5 to 7 days in the field. So we've been probably about 50% of our small grains have been planted, and we really needed the rain for the moisture. Everything was extremely dry. We're going through a lot of the deeper sloughs and potholes, which is very uncommon for us just with no snowpack.
Warming temperatures also means incoming weeds.
Yeah, so with the recent rains, I think the ground was cool enough here that we weren't seeing much for weed pressure here a week, 10 days ago. But with the last rain we had here over the weekend, things are definitely starting to green up here a little bit. And I think with the warmer temperatures and stuff, we'll see the weeds starting to emerge rapidly. We're seeing foxtail barley is probably one of the bigger ones right now, and that always germinates when it's a little cooler. But I suspect there'll be some volunteer canola, some kochia, pigweeds, those kind of things that I'm sure will be coming here shortly.
According to Belgrade, Minnesota's John Magus, farmers in the area are still a couple of days away from getting back out into the fields.
Well, we started about a little over 2 weeks ago and got a little bit of corn in, but then we got been drained out for the last 2 weeks. We're still a day or two away from starting up here again.
Some farmers are starting to work the sandier soils, but it's mostly a waiting game at this point.
Yeah, close to 5 inches of rain, and the soil got pretty saturated. But, we had a pretty good drying days the last couple of days. And pretty much, the ground, the heavier ground we're on in this area. Little's been done yet. They're starting to go a little more on the lighter sandy irrigated ground. They're starting to, last night, they were starting to work up a little bit, I could see.
According to NDSU plant pathologist Andrew Friskop, various wheat diseases could be seen throughout the wheat fields this year. Friskop says Pythium root rot might be a problem due to the cool and wet conditions early in the season. Rust diseases have been identified earlier than normal in northern Kansas, which could travel north. Friskop also will be monitoring bacterial leaf streak this season, depending on the amount of rain in June.
Lawmakers are busy in St. Paul trying to wrap things up before the sessions conclude on May 20th. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Melissa Hammer has more on this report.
There are differences between the House and Senate versions of the agriculture budget bill in the Minnesota legislature. Surprisingly, State Senator Rob Kupek feels agriculture could be one of the most contentious issues in the conference committee. The
Senate version, I think, takes a more slower, measured approach on a lot of things, and I think the House version changes a lot of things. And one of the big areas for the ag refunding, puts money into the Agri program, which we were a little short last year, so we got a little bit more money to keep that going. And that's one of those research programs that all the farming communities have really enjoyed, that the stuff they do working towards the future. And the House kind of wants to take a little bit of that money out of Agri and utilize it for other purposes, particularly around fertilizer. So we in the Senate are not particularly fond of that idea.
KUPEC sponsored two railroad safety bills this session. One provision would limit train length to less than 8,500 feet.
When I've checked, there are no ag facilities within the state of Minnesota that have the ability to load trains of that length. Most grain trains, 110, 120 cars, fall well short of this. So it really would not have any impact on that. And there's even some arguments that say some of the grain trains, they go and then they sit and they wait to put them on these longer trains. So that actually might move things faster to market. Also, longer trains, we don't have the sidings, and so sometimes that congests traffic too. So some of the arguments, at least, that the railroads are making are not really, at least from my point of view, exactly true around some of the ag commodities moving on the rail.
Reporting Agriculture's Business, this is Melissa Hammer for the Red River Farm Network.
USDA's weekly export sales report shows combined old and new crop corn export sales for the week ending May 2nd at 938,000 metric tons. That's 18% more than the previous week, 15% more than the four-week average. Combined soybean export sales, 433,000 tons, are 3% more than the previous week, but 4% less than the four-week average. And net wheat sales, 447,000 metric tons, are 16% more than the previous week and 35% above the four-week average.
Net beef sales in USDA's weekly export sales report are reported at 12,000 metric tons, down 45% from the previous week and 29% below the four-week average. Top destinations are Japan, South Korea, Mexico, Taiwan, and Canada. Net pork sales of 24,000 metric tons are down 27% from the previous week and 26% below the four-week average. You're listening to the Red River Farm Network. Thursday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. Corn Belt marketing analyst Sam Hudson says traders are doing a little pre-report positioning.
We've got a crop report tomorrow, so we've had a pretty good run, a little bit of concern about weather, a little bit of an inflationary tailwind, some short covering, obviously, some of the funds covering some of their positions. And I think there's going to be a lot of interest to see where that data lands in the report tomorrow. Keep in mind that as of the closes on Tuesday, but that'll shed a light on what is or is not possible in terms of additional short covering if the weather stays wet. If you get an opening, for planting window across the bulk of the Corn Belt, and it seems like we're filling in the holes a little bit at a time. The spots that are missing rains, we're able to get back in the field, but that pace and whether or not we stretch any of these plantings out in the third or fourth week of May, I think dictates our market direction here for the next couple weeks.
And the livestock markets are looking softer.
We're just treading water a little bit here to figure out what the next move in the feed market's going to be. We've had a little bit of pressure on the feeder cattle market, not only with the some of the poor headlines with the avian flu situation, but also with the rally that we've seen in the corn market. And so short term, I think we've got to figure that out first, see if the cash prices can prove in another leg higher. And I think you got to see that before we can move higher again. I think it's really going to be up to those back month cattle futures. If they can continue to rise, then we can buoy the market altogether. But if we stay flat there and this feed costs rise a little bit more here before it's all said and done, then I wouldn't rule out a lazy market there still.
The plant-based food company Beyond Meat posting a larger-than-expected loss in the first quarter. Overall revenues totaled nearly $76 million. That's down from $92 million a year ago. The company suffered a net quarterly loss of $54 million. Looking ahead to the balance of the year, Beyond Meat officials said its financial outlook remains uncertain due to inflation, high interest rates, and weaker demand for plant-based meat category.
FDA Commissioner Robert Califf, while testifying before the U.S. Senate Ag Appropriations Subcommittee, said that the agency is preparing for the possibility of bovine influenza A jumping to humans. Califf admitted that the probability of that happening is low and that officials from the FDA, Agriculture Department, and Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are speaking daily about the ongoing issue. To date, only two cases have been reported in people, one in Texas and another in Colorado. Both cases were considered mild with reported symptoms of eye redness and fatigue before making full recoveries.
According to NDSU's most recent crop and pest report, plant pathologist Wade Webster shares his thoughts on what diseases might be prevalent in soybeans this year. With a warm, dry 2023 season, soybean cyst nematode counts were high, so numbers of eggs in the soil are also likely to be high and cause yield losses. Due to the moisture-rich environment, seedling diseases and white mold also have conditions to thrive. Webster will also be on the lookout for frog eye leaf spot this season.
Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council is launching a new Behind the Dollar campaign that aims to increase transparency around the use of soybean checkoff dollars. The campaign will highlight the impact of checkoff funds over the past 50 years in areas such as agronomic research and biodiesel market development. The latest data from the United Soybean Board, which directs the National Checkoff Program, states a $12.34 return for each dollar paid by Minnesota farmers.
USDA's Organic Market Development Grant Program has awarded over $60 million to 70 companies in support of the expansion of organic markets in the U.S. The program focuses on production and distribution of the organic supply chain and aims to increase availability and demand for domestically produced organic agricultural products. Among the companies awarded the grants were Bigfoot Farms of Ridgeway, Wisconsin, and Healthy Oilseeds of Carrington, North Dakota.
The latest U.S. drought monitor shows wet weather across portions of the Great Plains and Midwest, leading to improvements in the drought map. Widespread rains fell across Iowa, Missouri, southern Minnesota, and portions of central Kentucky, leading to moderate to heavy rains that also fell across the High Plains, improving drought conditions in eastern Kansas, Nebraska, and eastern North Dakota. Western Kansas missed the rains, and drought conditions increased or remained the same. You are listening to the Red River Farm Network.
Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. Class 3 milk in the cheese markets have shot higher this week. EverAg market analyst Brandon Weigel says demand is the major driver.
Yeah, so a big piece of this move in dairy has been a little bit of a combination of two things. So yes, it's tightening production. You know, as you noted there, the Southwest is maybe seeing a little bit of tightness in that milk production. But we also had an extremely strong day of cheese exports. Cheese exports continue to find the bid, and we continue to really kind of drive that export number higher in the cheese front.
And Weigel says low prices stimulated good demand.
You know, that's one of the issues we were dealing with here this spring, was there was just so much cheap, abundant cheese. And as we got so cheap, we finally started to see people come into the market, you know, from our global supply or global trade partners, excuse me, and buy up some of this excess supply. And that has subsequently driven the price of cheese back up in a more favorable position to help push that class three market.
Taking a look at the markets before we leave you, July wheat Minneapolis is up 2¾ cents, 705.5. September Minneapolis up 2¾ to 711.5. July wheat Chicago up 3½ pennies, 637.5. Kansas City winter wheat's July contract up 3½ cents, 652 even. July corn down 2¼, 456¼. September corn down 2¼ as well, 466¼. December corn down a penny and 3/4 to 479.5. July soybeans 19¼ cents lower, 1208.5. August soybeans 17¼ lower, 1210¼. November soybeans 13 cents down on the day, 1199¾. In Winnipeg, July canola down $6.50 per metric ton to $6.50.20. That's Canadian. June live cattle down 40 cents, 176.07. August live cattle down 32 cents to 173.90. October live cattle down 47 cents to 176.97. May feeder cattle down $1.45 to 238.75. August feeder cattle down $1.25 to 251.15. You're listening to the Red River Farm Network.